I think we may start to move towards a little bit more focus on the new Fed chair. The market is really not pricing any rate cuts for this year. Macro has already somewhat done its thing to the crypto markets.
Michael Nadeau, founder of the DeFi Report, delivers clear market insights and on-chain analysis for investors navigating crypto and Web3.
Blending equity-style research with a background in finance, he makes complex DeFi trends accessible through actionable frameworks and educational content.
We're very clearly kind of right in the middle of the latest, you know, crypto winter, and I'm just seeing like lots of just commentary that DeFi is dead, you know, crypto's dead. This is like very, this is what I expect to see like at the depths of a bear market. Most of the hacks you see in crypto and in the DeFi space are social engineering hacks.
Hey guys, don't skip this part. There's something for you to win here. We're running a 21-day sprint and giving away 3 signed copies of our Bitcoin book to listeners who help grow the show on Fountain. There are 3 ways to win. Either become the top supporter and cumulative sats zapped over this 21-day period, or provide the most Bitcoin-like zap, meaning you don't just zap big, but in style, or last but not least, create the most amount of valuable content around any episode during this 21-day period on either X or Noster. Provided you are a subscriber to the show on Fountain, have reposted the sprint post on Noster or X, and emerge as the leader in any of the categories mentioned above, you'll be the proud owner of a new Bitcoin book in no time. We'll share an update of the leaderboard on each show during the campaign. Good luck, and now on to today's show.
Hey guys, welcome back to Less Noise, More Signal. Yes, and welcome back to Michael from the DeFi Report. It's great to have you back, the fourth time I think we just discussed, right?
I think so. Always good to chat with you, Pascal.
Yeah. That's why I want to keep on bringing you back. I mean, you have a unique perspective on like blending macro and crypto and Bitcoin. And yeah, that's just very amazing. So thanks for coming back on. I hope, as we just discussed, we can keep these going so people get some value out of this, us repeatedly talking markets. Yeah. And I just wanted to maybe put it out there again. You know, we partner with you. We have this sort of discount code, you know, that people can use if they want to check out the DeFi Report at Less Noise, More Signal, or LNMS short. That's the code. And so I encourage people to really check out your work in your research reports. I read it every time. Very valuable stuff. So thanks a lot for this.
Of course. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Nice. Okay, cool. So let's get started. I mean, macro, you know, that's where we have to start. What's top of mind for you regarding macro these days? A lot of things are happening, but maybe where should people focus?
Always a lot happening. And, you know, as a crypto focused investor, always got to keep an eye on what's happening out there in the macro world. I think I'm probably becoming less focused on macro, especially with kind of where we're at in the crypto cycle right now, and we can get into that maybe a little later. But yeah, I mean, I think you kind of have to let the market is speaking, I think, as it pertains to what's happening in Iran, what's happening with, you know, concerns around, you know, global oil prices. And I think you kind of have to take the market at its word. You know, if you look at sort of where things are getting priced in terms of future oil prices, 12 months out, 24 months out, you know, the market's saying, you know, oil is going to be roughly, you know, $75 per barrel or so. And so it seems like the, you know, investors are just kind of at this point looking through what's happening over there. We'll see if that's the correct take. But historically, geopolitical events like this have short-term disruption. They tend to be something you almost can't even see on a long-term chart or of what actually happens. So, you know, this could obviously, you know, it could drag on longer and there's potential escalation. So I think people still need to be paying attention to that. But I think the market has sort of spoken on where oil prices are. And if you go on Yahoo Finance today, you know, I think if you went on there over the last 2-3 weeks, probably the headline has something to do with Iran or Trump tweets or oil prices. Today, it's about the new Fed chair, Warsh's. He's having a Senate hearing today. So I think we may start to move towards a little bit more focus on the new Fed chair. What are, you know, this nomination process is potentially going to be somewhat, you know, contentious just with everything that's been going on with the Fed. And his first meeting would be in June. And so I think the market's going to start to turn its focus to who is this person? What are the policies that he is going to be implementing at the Fed? They've talked about, cutting rates. We know Trump wants rates cut. The market is really not pricing any rate cuts for this year. It's a kind of a tough spot for the Fed chair to come in when he's expected to cut rates and inflation, and we're getting high CPI prints, 3.3%, and you have oil prices that are elevated from where we were when we started the year. So not a great environment to be coming in to cut rates, but I think this is where the market is going to start to turn its focus here. And that's really kind of what I'm mostly focused on moving forward as well. In terms of like the crypto markets and how this is all, impacting things, like I'm kind of less concerned about macro, maybe kind of in the short term. I think macro has already somewhat done its thing to the crypto markets. The air has been, kind of pulled out of the markets over the last 6 months or so. We're very clearly kind of right in the middle of the latest, crypto winter. Bitcoin's down about 40% off of its high. And we've been trading in a channel here between 60K and 75K now for 2.5 months or so. And I think really the question for me is just has Bitcoin kind of hit its low for the cycle? And then I'm looking at the rest of the altcoin space. Altcoin space has really been in a bear market. I think you can go back to January of 25 or so. And you could say that, most of the rest of the crypto space has been in a bear market since that time. And that's mostly been washed out. There's been a bunch of recent hacks in DeFi, which we can talk about. These are all things like the environment right now is very like, it's a crypto winter. We're right in the bottom of a crypto winter. And when I think about macro and how that ties in with Bitcoin right now, for me, it's not so much of like, can macro do more harm to the crypto markets? We're already sort of, at close to the lows, and you can see, seller exhaustion, across a lot of charts out there. So it's not really about can it hurt macro more? It's more, is there a catalyst when we look out over the next 6 to 12 months? Is there a catalyst for lower interest rates, potentially lower real yields that would be good for Bitcoin, potentially, a impulse on the fiscal side? That's also really not driving liquidity into crypto markets right now, but it's possible if the war drags on, we get a spending bill and something like that, and we could see an increase in liquidity. So I'm really focused on what's the potential catalyst that would make me think, okay, crypto may have bottomed and we're about to go into the next kind of expansion phase here. So a bit of a ramble, but that's kind of how I'm seeing things right now.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us your perspective. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. Maybe start with the Fed and like, how things are going to go. I mean, that's a good point that I feel like the market, smart money investors and people are sort of focusing their views on what's going to happen at the Fed, because I think that's also why Bitcoin and other risk assets have just done somewhat well in the last couple of weeks, because a lot of people were like, okay, CPI and inflation metrics, they came in higher, and why is it the case that these assets are doing well, if inflation is sort of heating up? But I think that's exactly the case, where because with the Federal Reserve, if they're going to pause, if they're going to hike, that's kind of the question everybody needs to be asking, because if they are going to pause, that will probably put downward pressure on on real rates, which then would be headed lower, which would create a positive environment for liquidity. And that's actually good for risk assets and stuff like this. And so I think, that's a good point. At the same time, you mentioned the Federal Reserve, it's really important. I saw this paper, I think that they published, some of the people around there, also Stephen Miron, where they actually eloquently laid out that they really want to wind down the balance sheet further, to your point, wouldn't be that positive for risk assets. So there's many of these conflicting things which probably come in different time periods and time frames. But that's certainly something which, you need to kind of consider as an investor right now. Anything to add on that front?
I think that's right. I think the transition that's likely coming here is, and this is something we've been talking about and studying, really going back to when Trump came into office. And it's kind of this like shift from the government as kind of the nexus of spending and liquidity coming into markets. And what we think that Scott Bessent, the Trump administration is pushing for is really, let's actually get the private sector moving and doing that through bank lending and sort of having maybe a little bit more of a organic economy, try to get a budget deficit down and get liquidity coming out to the market through bank lending in the private sector. There's a potential, like, you know, new regulation that's just allowing the banks to hold more treasuries on their books to do this. And so I think this is where people are going to start to turn, is like, what are the policies going to look like moving forward? Is it possible that we can get rates down? We can do some deregulation, really get the banks moving. But that, to me, would potentially basically fill the gap on the liquidity side if you're spending less on fiscal and really kind of get things going, potentially kick off the next start of like the next business cycle. I think that's, you know, kind of how I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
We'll see how, you know, things ultimately shake out. Like I said, if the war drags on, we could see a massive, you know, spending bill come through. The Trump administration has already requested a 50% increase in the military budget for FY27. So that's, you know, $1.5 trillion of military spending. So if that happens, then it starts to turn more towards, like, that's the run it hot economy that I think this was sort of the narrative last year. But if you have a huge spending bill and we're now seeing more oil sales, right? There's more tankers that are coming to U.S. ports to buy oil. So oil sales are actually up in the U.S. And you could have this like setup here where you have an oil boom in the U.S. and then you have somewhat of a wartime economy with fiscal spending. So that this is sort of like the run it hot potential economy. If you're pinning interest rates in that type of environment, that's, to me, that's the debasement trade, where there's monetary repression, you're running the economy hot, it's good, you have a strong real economy, and then in the financial sector you're basically doing financial repression, and that would be a good environment for lower real yields, probably a good environment for things like Bitcoin and gold, if this is kind of where we're potentially heading here.
Yep. Yeah, and that's, again, Bitcoin, as we discussed, I think, in one of our first episodes, Bitcoin is all about sniffing out these type of environments quite early on. You know, even I know some of my friends and other people are not sort of agreeing, because they're like, no, Bitcoin, it's just doing its own thing. It's not snuffing out nothing, or it ain't snuffing out nothing, you know. But I mean, the question I'm having, and this goes back to your other point, because you mentioned, you also have this feeling that as of now, quote unquote, Bitcoin kind of feels detached from macro, yeah, because a lot of the air was already sucked out of it, of the market, and now there's not that much left, you know, to keep it wobbled around or yanked around. And that's, we put it like this. So, I mean, this could almost lead you to the conclusion, okay, yeah, Bitcoin is not sort of correlated right now to macro, you know, even there could be a lot of things happening, and we sort of saw it now with the war, and Bitcoin kind of was able to defy it and everything. What extent is this true? Because we've also seen this huge deleveraging, I guess, you know, there's still leverage in the market, yeah, but I mean, there was deleveraging happening. The marginal driver of the price might still be the short-term holder, but it's maybe transitioning to more long-term holders as these kind of people sell off and kind of go out of the markets. Yeah. How do you think about this? Because it feels almost like this would be true in a true bear market, you know, that Bitcoin just does its own thing and doesn't care about positive or negative news in the wider macro space, you know, because it's following its own cycle. Yeah. Any thoughts on that?
I think there could definitely be some merit to that, especially like kind of at this stage of the crypto cycle. And my kind of framework for investing in crypto markets is like, I have a deep respect for the actual cycle within crypto. And this is like somewhat of a contentious thing. Even a lot of crypto natives will sort of fade this idea of these cycles. But to me, it's actually somewhat of like a law of nature. It comes from my understanding of, you know, business cycles in traditional markets. And when you think about just how that works and how, you know, interest rates feed into demand for loans, which then feeds into growth and hiring and CapEx spending, and how that then feeds into, you know, investor allocation, you know, in the financial markets. That same process plays out in crypto. And I think people maybe don't see it because they're not looking at the certain data or different points as that plays out. But we just went through kind of that whole process in crypto. The way to track that in crypto is more, the KPIs are slightly different. These markets are more volatile, they're more reflexive, but we can still track different data points to understand kind of where we're at in that process. And that process tends to kick off when the liquidity cycle has bottomed. We like to follow Michael Howell's, you know, liquidity framework at Global Liquidity Index. And we're in the process now where liquidity has come out of the crypto markets. We're now 6 months into the latest bear market. And at this part of the cycle, what I'm more focused on is really like understanding the market structure for Bitcoin, right? Once liquidity comes out of the market and you roll into a bear market, it's really more about understanding various wallet cohorts. And what tends to happen in Bitcoin is you get a lot of new money that comes in at sort of usually the last year of the kind of up cycle. And then in the first year of the bear market, that money tends to rotate from somewhat, you know, weak hands down towards people that are maybe long-term holders, as you were mentioning. And we're in that process right now. And I think the question for me is just more, has Bitcoin bottomed for this cycle? And, you know, my sense is that, you know, I think that's hard to say. I don't have super strong conviction. I'm leaning more towards, you know, there's probably another 6 months of downward chop, you know, kind of what we've been seeing over the last 6 months. We have been in an upward channel here for 2.5 months or so. And I think some of the ranges that I'm focused on right now is probably like K is the short-term holder cost basis. And if we can flip that into support and have a couple of weekly closes or a monthly close above those levels, then I would start. And there was some sort of catalyst for me to say, okay, things are shifting in terms of the macro outlook, in terms of liquidity conditions outlook, then I think you could potentially start to make a case that Bitcoin, you know, hit its low early in February when we kind of capitulated down to 60K, and maybe we're moving into the next expansion phase. That would be somewhat of an anomaly in terms of how bear markets have played out in the past. We tend to have, you know, we look at a lot of sort of cycle awareness KPIs as well, and we really haven't hit a lot of the KPIs that we would be looking for in a bear market. So, you know, I think for me, it's really at this stage, it's about really deeply understanding that the market structure. We're also looking, you know, we invest in other assets outside of Bitcoin, things that we think can outperform Bitcoin through a cycle. And so I think there's much more interesting opportunities with some of the kind of quality altcoins in the space. And on Bitcoin, I'm really just studying the market structure. We do have a report that's going to drop tomorrow that gets really into detail on this market structure that I'm talking about. That kind of helps me have conviction of like sort of that we're still a little bit early in this process. So,
hey guys, I'm thrilled to share my new book, The Bitcoin Enlightenment, co-authored with Mexican billionaire Ricardo Salinas. Make sure you grab your copy now and learn about how one of the richest people in all of Latin America thinks about Bitcoin. You'll find the link in the show notes.
Amazing. Yeah, I want to get into this report maybe real quick, but I mean, just let me summarize in my own words some of your points that you made, because I feel like I have a similar feeling, you know, that you're exactly right. Things move in cycles, you know, that's just how human life sort of works. You know, everything moves in cycles, like we have the seasons, you know, nature, everything, our sort of own body, biology, everything moves in cycles. And so I think even the bigger macroeconomy moves in cycles, but there, I guess it's more complex. It's more ginormous. Like this cyclicality gets sort of lost in complexity because you can't really keep track of this, you know, then you never really know, okay, where are we in the cycle? And with Bitcoin, I feel like it's not as complex, let's put it that way. You know, it's maybe also not as relevant in the real world. It's more synthetic. You know, you don't have like these sort of Bitcoin is not as entrenched in the real world. And that's why I guess then also it becomes a lot more the self-fulfilling prophecy, easier to track with all the, you know, open data that we have on chain and stuff. And so to your point, I mean, that's exactly why we can still stick to this four-year cycle theory. And it keeps on repeating, even though it feels like it should be over at some point in time. But yeah, that's very elegant. I mean, Bitcoin going down, yeah, it could potentially still go lower, you know, below 60K. We all don't know. Certainly with the uncertainty out there, I mean, you can never really know. But yeah, maybe we can kind of talk about the report that you just mentioned. You know, what are you looking at there? And could you kind of spell this out for us?
Yeah, definitely. So what we do is a lot of wallet cohort analysis. This is unique data that you can get from the Bitcoin blockchain. You know, it's similar to if you were able to analyze a stock, if you understood the sort of like price range that various holder cohorts of Apple stock came in, that would be kind of an interesting way to sort of analyze Apple in conjunction with the financials of the company and sort of the macro and the business cycle. And so this is, we just fold this in and we just consider this to be like an edge in terms of our understanding of the market structure out there. And, you know, this also feeds into how we, what we look at in terms of sentiment and just, you know, what's happening on crypto Twitter, like all of this kind of, you know, folds into the analysis. But what I think is kind of interesting is if you analyze the cohort of Bitcoin holders that came in at the top. So this is the cohort that bought Bitcoin between 108,000 and 126,000 at the top of the last cycle. So that would have been, you know, during 2025, during those periods where the price was in that range. So almost 15% of the Bitcoin supply was purchased during that period. And we
dollar also, terms, right? It's in dollar terms.
In coins.
In coins. Okay.
Coins. So yes, this is purely the coins as a percentage of the circulating supply today. And we also analyze that and we look at the same types of cohorts going back to prior cycles, right? So we know, you know, what percentage bought between 56 and 66,000 back in 2021. And then we will analyze these same cohorts as the bear market plays out. And then we're looking at, okay, where are those coins going? So what we've been seeing is that top cohort that came in this past cycle, that 15% has dropped almost 50%. So it's down to about 8.4% of the supply of a network today. And so what we're doing is tracking that and then comparing it to what we've seen in past cycles. I won't give away everything that's included in this report, but I think this is a really interesting way to understand just market structure and Bitcoin, how these cycles play out. What's very interesting to me is during the last crypto winter, we saw this rotation, similar rotation to what we're seeing today. The top cohort buyers are selling, and then you're getting a much larger band of holders that's, you know, at much reduced prices. What's interesting is like basically the cohort that was buying between 29 and 35K, that was the largest cohort of coins roughly 6 months into the last bear market. But the cohort that had the most coins at the bottom was between 18,000 and 21,000. So what that tells you is that lots of people were eager to come in and buy these dips. And then it looks like they coughed up their coins later at lower prices. And that's potentially the sort of setup that we have today, especially because of what's interesting when in Bitcoin bear markets, the price actually trends up in a sort of choppy sideways action for a longer period than it's going down in these bear markets. And so this is like torture to investors that want to come in. Maybe they were watching Bitcoin last year and they see that it's down and they're just eager to come in and buy. And this sort of price action does a good job of sort of pulling people in potentially as a trap before you have these somewhat, you know, somewhat violent corrections that can be 20, 30, 40% or so. So, you know, we get into the detail in the report that drops tomorrow, but this is just a way, like this is just one way that we add some interesting analysis to how we look at Bitcoin. Like I said, we look at a lot of cycle awareness. And there's a number of KPIs that we track there as well. And then we're looking at the cycle itself and there's a number of indicators. So this is how I think about these markets. And it's always just whether you're at the top of the market or you're at the bottom of the market, there's risk in both directions, right? Right now, the risk is that Bitcoin has already bottomed for the cycle and that we're just going to go off into a new expansion. So that's where your risk sits. Back in September, October, the risk was that we were already topping and then you potentially have, a downward move. So always balancing that. And, so that's kind of interesting to me. It looks very similar. What I would say is just to wrap it up, it looks very similar 6 months into this bear market as it did 6 months into the last bear market. So
interesting, very interesting. I mean, by the time this episode will be live, I guess the report will also be live. So we will definitely link that in the show notes. And again, I encourage everyone to check it out using Less Noise, More Signal, LNMS, a discount code to get some discount to check this out. I mean, from what I gathered, you know, and as you said, you don't want to leave the cat totally out of the bag, but it's just like you're trying to derive signals from comparing this cycle to prior cycles and like how these shifts have happened between these different cohorts, you know, exactly from the top cohort, you know, comparing it to last and maybe one cycle before and even one cycle before. It's always come down to this sort of level. And then you kind of knew, okay, this amount of top cohort holders has divested and this is where a potential bottom zone could be at. So these type of things is what you're trying to derive in the report, or that's very interesting.
Exactly. We were just talking about how like Bitcoin can separate somewhat from macro, and like this is kind of why, right? So if you're already deep into a bear market and you've kind of exhausted sellers at some point, what we're trying to get to is where we think the probability is that like sellers have somewhat been exhausted. And when you're in that type of a market structure and, you know, on-chain volumes are really down, trading volumes are really down, and you get into that type of structure, Bitcoin can sort of just operate independently in some ways from kind of what's happening on the macro side.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point to make here as well. One question in terms of the price, you know, the current price trading. I mean, you said it yourself, the short-term holder cost basis is at around 80K, 81K-ish, you know, and then obviously we have the ETF cost basis. The average is sort of also at 82K. I think some people have been calculating miner production cost is at 83K. I mean, there's different numbers out there. What I'm trying to get at is like, if we were to get above this sort of short-term holder cost basis and we stayed there for maybe a week or a week and a half, would that already be very constructive in your view? Because I'm asking, this is usually where I think it would be constructive, because that's like the first wall we have to tear down, this short-term holder cost basis. But then what's also interesting, if we look at like the cost basis of these different cohorts, we see that there's like also a very big wall, I guess, between K and A. Okay, of people who have bought in, you know, like the short-term holders who might still then get into this short-term sell the rip behavior, because they still feel like, okay, now the market is giving me this opportunity to kind of divest at almost no loss, and they're taking it. How do you think about this? If we have the short-term holder cost base at 80K, but then we have this other wall up there, I mean, what do we have to clear to really say, okay, this thing will be off to the races again?
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, as part of some of this analysis that we do, analyzing kind of cost basis of different wallet cohorts, one zone that we saw a ton of dip buying early in this bear market was in the 84 to 85K. So roughly 4% of the supply was purchased in that zone. Back in, this is really December, January period when we had first come off of highs, we traded between 84 and like 97K or so for a while. And so, you know, I think that would be the next kind of level to get through. What I'm doing as Bitcoin sort of grinds up, I'm revisiting this data to give me an indication of like what's happening here. You know, are people exiting the market? Are some of these different cohorts maybe not going to sell and maybe just buy more, right? That would be interesting. The other thing that's different, I would say, in this bear market that warrants mentioning is what Michael Saylor is doing currently in MicroStrategy. So they have been able to buy a lot of Bitcoin in this current bear market. This is different. They did not have access to the capital markets and the ability to go out and buy Bitcoin back in 2022. And I think from what I can tell, they've already purchased roughly $10 billion of Bitcoin just in this year. So this is interesting, and this is potentially helping to set a, you know, a higher floor for Bitcoin. One thing that, you know, I would caveat with that is like, it seems to me like Michael Saylor's you know, buying activity in the markets during bull markets almost acts like kind of pouring gasoline on the fire, and people will try to front run him, and then he's tweeting, and you know, it tends to, I think, just like add a little bit more of a pulse to the markets. I'm not really seeing that in the current market structure. It just looks to me like he's able to get in the market and buy more Bitcoin. I'm not so sure that, like, you know, if we have another sell-off period, does it matter? Like, is he just going to be somehow mopping up all the Bitcoin that people are selling and keeping the price, you know, above that 60K zone or so? I think that I'm not so sure about that, but I do think it's interesting that, you know, he's buying this much Bitcoin. He is a buyer that we did not have, a large buyer that we did not have in these markets in the last cycle. And then the other thing that's new is the ETFs, which you mentioned. And the ETFs, the flows have been weak, but we're not seeing large outflows at the same time. Roughly 88K or so cost basis for the ETF holders. I tend to think like that's going to get challenged, like that will get challenged. And I just don't think the ETF holders have experienced enough pain, to be honest, just yet. So I sort of think there's potentially another move down here. But I'm not feeling like, to me, like the way the market structure is set up and the way that macro is set up right now, I don't think there's like some risk that like there's going to be this big influx of liquidity and like Bitcoin's about to go into its next expansion zone. I think we're kind of in a zone where clearly in a bear market, when you look at all of the data we look at, it's just very clear. Like we're in a bear market. Trading volumes are way down. ETF flows are almost non-existent. Yes, but, you know, not a lot of outflows, but really not a lot happening there. Social sentiment is in the gutter. We've now seen a wave of DeFi, you know, hacks, and that is weighing further on sentiment. This is like kind of what you expect in like the bottom of a bear market. And so Bitcoin doesn't bottom and then just take off. It kind of bottoms and then sort of kind of slowly chops for a little while. Things get quiet and then eventually like the conditions shift. So that's kind of my view on it.
Yeah. And like, if I summarize this, I mean, I have a similar hunch, you know. I feel like, okay, I'm not overly constructive. At the same time, I'm not super bearish. I don't feel like there's anything looming just around the corner that will take us down to 45K, you know, or 30K, as some bears are also calling for. But then at the same time, I just have this kind of feeling that if the market were so generous to let like these ETF holders come away, as you said, you know, with that little pain that they felt during this bear, it would just be a world first, I guess, you know. That's kind of like my feeling, because and that's why I have this sort of worry or concern in the back of my head that we might see some more pain, but we'll see. I mean, nobody knows. I mean, you mentioned DeFi and broaden out our view, and we go into the broader crypto space. There, I feel like a lot more pain and also disgust or disdain or whatever we want to call it is there, you know, and that points to me to that's like the real bottom and signal that we can see in DeFi. Maybe you said it yourself. I mean, what is happening there? I mean, it's probably also price, you know, who has never really kind of kept float with Bitcoin, but then other things are happening. And then maybe we can turn to this scenario that we're seeing currently, like money is leaving DeFi at an unprecedented scale. Why is this? Is it because of the hacks, or can you shed some light there as well?
Yeah. So, you know, this is an interesting topic right now because of all these hacks. And I'm seeing, like, I think yesterday I was on crypto Twitter and I'm just seeing like lots of just commentary that DeFi is dead, you know, crypto's dead. This is like very, this is what I expect to see like at the depths of a bear market. And that's what we're seeing now. And you know, I think the latest wave of negative sentiment, this is mostly tied to what happened on Aave. So Aave is the largest lend borrow application in the Ethereum ecosystem. Got up to about 30 billion of active loans this past cycle. It's down to about 15 billion right now. And this is not a indictment of Aave or Aave security or Aave smart contracts, but they had an integration with restaked RS ETH, which is restaked ETH. And this was through an integration with something called KelpDAO and Layer Zero Bridge. And that was exploited. And that led to some bad debt on Aave related to those restaked ETH tokens. So it looks like there's roughly 200 billion or so of bad debt. That was capital that was deposited on Aave, using that to access capital to get loans. And that's the capital that was hacked. And you know, this is like, this is a tricky thing in DeFi now. Aave has to have a governance vote around how are these losses going to be taken? Are they going to be socialized amongst, you know, these restaked ETH holders and the depositors? Is there a chance that these L2s or layer zero is going to get involved. Aave does have a reserve, I believe, for bad debts. I'm not sure if that's going to be used here. And so that's kind of the situation there. I mean, my view on it is that DeFi to me is about efficiency. It's about new business models. It's about new settlement rails. It's about global finance. And these are all the things that matter for DeFi. It's just better technology for financial markets. What we don't want is this like concept of open finance that's just the Wild West and there's no protections, there's no KYC. Nobody wants to access Aave for some utility to get a loan and deposit capital somewhere and then be subject to North Korean hackers with no protections, right? This is not, cannot be the future of, you know, these protocols and how this works. So you absolutely have to have some sort of protection, some sort of insurance, some sort of wrapper around some of this for this to actually integrate with traditional finance and these new business models really to come to finance. So I think that's what's ultimately going to happen. And that to me is the future of DeFi. Part of the reason I think this has been a little bit slower than normal than it could have been, is just we haven't had the regulation and the clarity to kind of make that happen and to actually take the best of this technology and then fold it into, you know, actual use cases that institutional investors and Wall Street can start to build on. So a bit of a ramble, but that's my view. And it's unfortunate that this is still happening. And for whatever reason, it tends to happen and these things tend to play out during bear markets when sentiment is already in the gutter because prices are down. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of people making claims. They're leaving, you know, they're leaving crypto or leaving DeFi. I think it's a little bit of an emotional thing that just happens when these things happen.
No, as you said, it's exactly what you want to see at the depth really at the bottom of a bear market. But then, I mean, also when it comes to Aave, I'm not super deep into this, but from what I read, it's also, depending on what chain you are, you're not going to be probably not equally affected by this bad debt situation. You know, depending, I think Mantle is a layer two that is maybe you're a little worse off in whatever scenario will be. Okay. But then if you are on main chain, I think things are not that bad. But yeah, you really have to, if you are exposed to these technologies, I think now is the time to really care and see how you could be affected. But I mean, from what I hear when I listen to you, you don't think this is the death blow to DeFi in and of itself. Yeah. And I mean, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger in the end. That's probably also how the traditional financial system has kind of weathered storms and then grown stronger. And I feel like the same could be the case with DeFi. Maybe one point that I wanted to ask you on, because that's what I've been hearing from some friends who have been exposed to these DeFi protocols, and some of them have pulled their entire capital out of the DeFi protocols because they're mentioning, or they brought up the point that, you know, with AI innovation and the speed and pace of how these LLMs get better. I mean, we've saw it with Anthropic, with Mythos, that just kind of was pulled off the market again because it was too dangerous. If it gets into the hands of hackers, you know, they could wreak all sorts of havoc. And that's why these people are pulling the capital from DeFi protocols, because they're saying, well, we don't know. It just could be exposed too much, you know, because again, with DeFi, we have all this smart contract risk. And so do you think this is a valid concern? Have you looked into this at all? Or how do you think about this going forward?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a valid concern. I don't park, you know, large sums of my own capital in DeFi for these reasons. I do use these protocols mainly just for testing business models and things like that. But I've always been of the mind that like if you're going to put your money in DeFi, the yields need to be, you know, commensurate with the risk that you're taking by putting your capital into some of these untested protocols where there's no insurance, things like that. So for me, like, you know, I think where this ultimately shakes out is, you know, we need the regulation to come and then actual sort of interfaces built on top of these. Like DeFi is infrastructure to me, and there's going to be interfaces to the ability to build, you know, new use cases and bring sort of like these open markets into more traditional use cases. So that is going to happen at the user interface layer, where there's KYC, there's some sort of protections, and the infrastructure underneath it is just going to work flawlessly, you know, built on these public blockchains. So that's kind of like I guess, the end game for where this is going. But yeah, I mean, capital is definitely leaving the ecosystem. I mean, it's not as bad. I've saw a lot of, there's a lot of sort of scaremongering type content on Twitter right now. I mean, I think if you look at TVL on Ethereum, it's actually up from where it was early February. So it's not like there's just a mass exodus of capital on chain. Same idea on Solana. It's actually up, TVL's ups from where it was in early February. But I think there's a little bit of a scare going on. Aave did lose, I think, roughly 2 billion of active loans, you know, in this process. And that doesn't surprise me. We're in a bear market for crypto, and there's really no, and we talked about sort of the cycle. And one thing that happens in kind of up cycles in crypto is, and this is similar to what you see in banking as well, is DeFi protocols will try to attract capital and often offering boosted yields to do this. And they're trying to attract customers. It's the same exact thing that happens in the traditional banking sector when interest rates drop and demand for loans increases. Banks will reduce their lending standards to attract that capital. DeFi protocols will boost yields to attract that capital. And so that's you know, part of what we look for during up cycles. When you're in a down cycle, there's almost none of that occurring. And then the rates that you're able to get in DeFi in some cases are lower than what you would see in traditional markets and in treasury and just holding, you know, T-bills. So there's just no incentive to be in DeFi if your rates are lower and you're taking on all of this additional risk. And I think, you know, that's kind of where we're at right now. And this is part of the reason why these bear markets have been so brutal, I think, for in the DeFi space over the last few cycles.
No, definitely, definitely. That's exactly right. I mean, they're brutal in the sense of that, you know, it wears down investors and sometimes stuff like this happens. As you said, the worst happens in the bear market, and we're already in a bear market, and all the bad things come on top. But then at the same time, as you mentioned, like, bear markets are also an opportunity. You know, what I just want, one point I want to make, because I heard some people make the this argument or wanting to look into this. I mean, you know, we talked about this bottoming signals that people are now trying to carve out. You know, when has Bitcoin bottomed? Because they were like, okay, maybe if I sort of know with some probability that Bitcoin has put in a bottom, maybe I can then borrow against my BTC, you know, and do it through a DeFi protocol. And I'm like, okay, this is an interesting idea, because if you want to do this, yeah, do it at the depth of the bear market, and not maybe if we're up top heavy in that sense. But then you got to factor in not only the price, you know, but also other risks, like potentially, right, you know, that AI is now around and makes things a lot more hackable. And then it doesn't help if you do it at the bear market bottom, but then it can just kind of get stolen because of some hacker who has access to these very interesting tools. So yeah, I just wanted to put this point out there. I mean, yeah, you got to factor in all of it, you know, and I guess that's what you guys do at the DeFi Report as well. You know, just try to look at it holistically, right?
Yes. And yeah, and just to come back to your question on, like, are these new models and stuff, you know, ultimately, you know, causing some of these hacks? I haven't seen that just yet. I mean, most of the hacks you see in crypto and in the DeFi space are social engineering hacks, and, you know, North Korea is often behind a lot of these. I haven't really deeply dug into what happened on Aave, if that was like a social engineering thing or not, or who's responsible, if they know who's responsible. But as far as like these models and stuff, I think it is a concern for sure. And it's obviously a concern that Anthropic, you know, is holding back these, you know, some of these models or limiting access to them. So I think there's definitely something there. That's not unique to crypto. That is, like, you know, that is, I think the entire internet is sort of up for grabs, you know, potentially there. So
yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, people always have to fact check every sort of idea, whether it be like, you know, people calling for a mass exodus happening in DeFi, or like everyone saying, you know, Anthropic and OpenAI have these like very powerful models. I mean, they would obviously market them as such, you know, because they're looking to IPO later this year. So they want to not only create as many models, but also create hype around these models by, you know, telling everybody, look, it can potentially give you all these 0-day exploit opportunities and stuff. And so you always have to take these things with a grain of salt. That's also a great point to point out. Well, Michael, I think we've gone for 45 minutes almost. So yeah, thanks a lot for doing this. It was great again. Great chatting to you, and hope we can do it in the future again. And yeah, let's just remind people of your report. Check them out, and they should check it out in the show notes. And we see you next time.
Yeah, it's always great to chat with you, Pascal. Yeah, if people are interested, check out the link. I think it's an interesting time to be looking at a lot of this data. If you're in the crypto markets and you're trying to buy, you know, where you think Bitcoin's potentially bottom, we do a lot of analysis around that and try to point people to where we think the probabilities are. So that report will be dropping tomorrow, and we share weekly cycle awareness reports, and we actually give people access to our portfolios as well. We made some changes in our portfolio this week, so you can get access to that as well with a subscription. So
yeah, much appreciated. Thanks a lot. Great. Enjoy, Michael.
Appreciate it, Pascal.
Bye.